takes care of a number of items off our calendar today.
Thanks, everyone, for being here.
Yeah, and making yourselves available.
Thanks for your work.
Thank you.
Work on those items.
Okay, item number six, former Castle VegTech. Mr. Briggs.
Thank you. The Castle VegTech site is in Santa Clara County and is a longstanding cleanup site in our region, and today is an item for consideration of my determination regarding compliance with the terms of a settlement agreement that goes back 12 years. And Katie DeSimone of our staff is going to be is going to be making our initial presentation.
Okay.
And ma'am, you are?
Nancy Buchanan.
Okay.
Do you have
I've got your card here.
Okay.
So, Katie DeSimone.
First time talking? Am I working? Yes. Hi, Katie DeSimone. Whoop. Was that me?
No, I did that.
Oh. Magical fingers. So, good morning, board members. Today, as Roger said, we're here to talk about Castle VegTech, as the site is commonly known in our files that stretch back about 27 years.
And Katie, could you speak up a little
yes.
bit louder?
It's not often I hear that. So
okay, so you can fill all the space in this room.
The site is located in Morgan Hill, west of Highway 101, south of East Dunn Avenue, give you a little perspective. It's an industrial commercial property. And formerly, it was used as an agricultural chemical formulation and application area by a company called A.L. Castle, which was subsequently sold. And the property has changed hands several times since we started regulating the site in 1982. The waste found in soil and groundwater are a variety of pesticides and volatile organic compounds. While there's a lot of things you can talk about for a case that has a 27-year history, what we're here for today is one specific issue, and that's the enforcement of the settlement agreement that was signed by the parties in June of 1997. The settlement agreement came about as a result of some previous administrative civil liabilities that we had issued in 1992, and the parties to those liabilities were the Castle family members and Jamina Investments and Castle VegTech Incorporated. The settlement agreement had several provisions, but predominantly the spirit of it was that they should, and the terms of it, were that they should comply with the terms of any existing or future cleanup orders for this property. And if they failed to comply, they would be given a notice, and they would be required to pay the penalties with interest for that noncompliance. On July 3, 2009, the executive officer of this regional board sent that notice pursuant to the terms of the settlement agreement and requested payment. The terms of the settlement agreement also allow for the Castle family or the parties of the settlement agreement to petition the board essentially for an appeal of the executive officer's determination. The staff received a letter from the Castle's counsel dated July 22nd asking for that board hearing to determine whether or not the executive officer's determination was merited. The argument within that letter was that based on an indemnification agreement that the Castle signed with the subsequent property owner, that they do not believe they should continue to be named as a responsible party for the cleanup or any other actions for this property. Staff has continued to name the Castle and the parties of this settlement agreement as responsible parties pursuant to state board policies and regulations. And so that's one issue. The basis for the executive officer's determination that we would be enforcing the settlement agreement terms was that we have not received the required quarterly groundwater monitoring reports for the property since 2005. The responsible parties have not responded to requirements to complete groundwater and monitoring well assessments. Most recently, we issued a cleanup and abatement order, and that is cited within the staff report. And that first set of compliance dates was August 31st, and we still have not received those documents yet. And we have met with a refusal from the parties involved to acknowledge responsibility for cleanup. Essentially, if I can say it in layman's terms, everybody's pointing the finger at someone else. We have had some supplemental contact since this agenda item was put out. Specifically, Mr. Tanzi is the current property owner. He issued a letter, which we have included in the supplemental sheet and responded to. And in essence, he supports staff recommendation to move ahead with the enforcement of the settlement agreement and support the executive officer's determination. We have also had verbal communications with various members of the Castle family who were parties to the settlement agreement. I believe some of them are here today. I think that was Nancy that we saw up there, Nancy Buchanan. So I believe they will be speaking on their behalf today. In summary, my recommendation as a staff member of the Water Board is to uphold the executive officer's determination regarding the settlement agreement enforcement, and therefore, pursuant to the terms of the settlement agreement, the liabilities would be due and payable with interest. Any questions?
Mr. Shallcross.
On this subsequent agreement, the subsequent agreement that you're referring to, that apparently, I believe it's the Castle family was relying on, the subsequent agreement with the new owner. Well, when was that entered into?
I don't know the exact date of it. I think the Castle family members could probably speak to that more directly, but it has changed hands subsequently since then. I would guess it was around 2001, since that was when the property was sold.
Okay, and then is the regional board a party to that agreement?
No.
Thank you.
Mr. O'Malley.
Thank you. And I believe I want to direct my questions to our council. And looking at the site history, could you review with me what applicable law would be in place, including property contract law versus the state law? Because it sounds to me there's a series of owners, and is it possible that you can transfer liability through written agreement, is maybe under property law, versus does state law take precedent over that it's not possible to transfer liability? I'm not familiar with the legal process, if you could clarify.
Okay. The original order to the parties, I believe, to the Castle and Jamina Investments was under Water Code Section 13304 of the Water Code, and the State Water Board has given direction to the regional boards how to implement that. And that law says the regional board can issue orders to any person who causes or permits a discharge that impacts water quality or could impact water quality. And the State Board is directed to name all the parties that can reasonably be found to have caused or permitted. And caused or permit means either they actually directly caused the problem or they permitted it by being an owner of the property and being responsible. They permitted it by leasing to somebody. They permitted it by not handling the problem when they knew it was there and they could have done something about it. So any person that fits into those categories should be named, as long as you have reasonable evidence to name them. And parties among themselves can make agreements, like here, indemnification agreements, which just means that one party says, I will pay for your part. That's their own agreement and has nothing to do with the board issuing the order. The board is obligated by state board direction to name all the parties that are reasonably associated with the property. And then if one of the parties is forced to pay money and they have an indemnification agreement with someone else, that someone else will have to pay them back. But that's their own relationship and not the board's responsibility.
That would have to be resolved in a separate court issue between those parties.
Right, exactly.
Thank you.
Mr. Hodgen.
At the bottom of page 3, just above public comments, there's a paragraph that begins, the settlement agreement liability is $85,000 plus interest. I had difficulty understanding that paragraph and how the 85 became 255,000. Can you explain that?
It's the interest all the way from the date of the settlement to the notice that was given in 2009. So essentially interest has been accruing since 1997 to 2009.
Okay. The wording just seemed to suggest that it was from 2007, but it's really from 1997.
Correct.
Thank you.
Any other board comments or questions at this point? Okay. I think that concludes staff's presentation.
Correct.
Mr. Briggs, and I have a few speaker cards. Okay. Nancy Buchanan. Yeah, lights, please. There we go. Okay. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Nancy Castle Buchanan, and I'm here to speak on part of the Castle family. We are not contesting that we are in violation of the settlement agreement, but we do feel that the amount of the liability is incorrect, specifically the interest portion tacked on to the penalty. It appeared that the figure of $255,766 was calculated by compounding interest. Is that right? Okay. Because in the settlement agreement, it doesn't refer at all to compounding interest. And according to the California Civil Code 19-16-2, interest cannot be compounded unless the agreement in question specifically states that that will be the method for calculating the interest. Another issue we wanted to raise with regard to the penalty amount was that on page 3, paragraph 1 of the settlement agreement, there is a portion that states that if the property in question, am I out of time?
No, your clock is not running. It's not you.
I don't know what that is.
Okay. That if the property in question was sold and the Castle family realized less than $350,000 from the sale, that the liability to my brothers and I would not exceed $5,000 each plus interest. I don't know if we qualify under that paragraph, but when the property was sold, it was just one step ahead of foreclosure because we had run out of money completely, and it was a distress sale, and there was very little money left over after paying the huge outstanding tax bill. We only sold the property because we had run out of money. We know we're liable for a penalty, but there's no way that our family can pay this type of fine. When our resources were exhausted, the cleanup stopped, and we just, you know, we're not willfully violating the settlement agreement. It's just out of our control. Over these many years, over $2 million was spent to clean up the property.
Is someone trying to address that beeping? Oh, okay. Could you just hold off until we get that beeping taken care of? It's not really fair to you or to us.
Sylvia, do you know what that is?
Where is it coming from?
It's hard to tell where it's coming from.
Yeah, that we could pull.
Yeah.
There we go.
Okay. You know, Katie's presentation was, you know, all accurate and true, and I'm not contesting anything there. But it doesn't mention the fact that we put out over $2 million to clean up this site. Every resource was exhausted. Every piece of property that the family owned was sold to pay for it. And when the resources were exhausted, we ran out. There's no more money. There's no more, you know, we're just unable to go any further. In the 12 years since the settlement agreement was signed, our family situation has changed drastically. My father, Tom Castle, passed away in 2004. My mom is 86 years old and in poor health, not strong enough to make the trip here today. A.L. Castle, Castle VegTech, and Jamina Investments are now defunct. My brother, Michael Castle, is barely keeping his head above water in real estate and is struggling not to have to file bankruptcy. I've been unemployed for a number of years, as has my brother Jamie. We know we're legally responsible for a penalty, but we're requesting that the board calculate how the penalty was figured out and perhaps, looking at that one paragraph regarding the sale of the property to see if we might qualify for a lesser penalty amount.
And which numbered paragraph is that?
It was paragraph 1 on page 3 of the settlement agreement.
It's paragraph 8.
8, which has the interest notation on it, too.
It also has the $5,000
right.
limit.
Okay.
And finally, to please take into account the family's present situation before voting on the issue.
Okay. Any, Mr. Hayashi? Turn on. Do you have a mic? You don't have a mic. Okay.
It was.
You have a mic.
Thank you, Chairman. Was the property foreclosed on?
It was not foreclosed on. It was very close to being foreclosed on. But when Mr. Hui, H-U-I, who we sold it to, came to us wanting to buy it at a greatly reduced amount, we only went ahead and sold it after he had made, I think, a number of trips down to San Luis Obispo to meet with John Maharis and go over everything that was involved with the property. I spent days photocopying every file so that, you know, he knew what he was getting into, and we had an agreement drawn up that he said he would take care of it. But, you know, I know that legally that doesn't, that's just a side issue.
One other question, and did you realize more than $350,000 from the sale?
I don't believe we did. I don't have the figures today, but I can get them. The tax bill was huge. It was hundreds of thousands. And I don't believe that we came out with $350,000. I think it was more like under 100.
Did you provide those documents, a record of?
This is something that I just came across a couple days ago, and I was not able to get the documents to bring down here, but I can get them.
I did look through the board records for that such item, anticipating that it might have been an issue when I was drafting all of the paperwork that supports this, and I did not find anything in the files, and I also did not request it from the Castle family in particular because it wasn't foreclosed on. So
true, it was not foreclosed
on.
I
did not ask for it.
No, because the paragraph refers to a foreclosure proceeding.
Right, it does.
Interesting. Okay, Mr. O'Malley.
Thank you. Well, I do have sympathy in knowing the economic problems everyone is facing with property. I am curious, though, in looking at the range of owners, it looks to me like there were very few reports filed over time, and I don't know whether you could address that or staff, but I would be concerned that I don't know what costs would be involved in filing reports on a timely basis or consistency. That would give us some indication of progress, it seems, and that's a concern to me, that it appears that very few reports were filed over time. And could you address that, I don't know, during your family's period, or staff could address why that occurred, or would that have helped us tracking progress or lack of progress had these reports been filed?
I might be able to address part of that. When we did our best to file reports, when reports were not filed, it was usually because we had run out of money to pay the company that was working for us at the time. All the money that we were able to put into the cleanup was contingent on selling property. That was all that, we didn't have a lot of money, but we did have property. And it was a matter of selling piece after piece after piece. And, we did our best, up until the time we sold to Mr. Wee in 2001.
Staff had some input on report filing?
Yes, there is actually a summary provided. We looked into that issue in the most recent cleanup and abatement order that was issued in June of this year. If you want kind of a synopsis, during Jamina's ownership of the property, 4 of the 12 required reports for quarterly groundwater monitoring were submitted. During Mr. Wee's property ownership and Mangano's, we had only 1 of the 13 quarterly groundwater monitoring reports submitted. Mr. Tansey's ownership of the property, which is continuing, we have received only 2 of the required 20. So,
what was it during the Castle period?
4 out of 12 was during that time.
Is that, I didn't notice that. Is that in our report here somewhere?
It's in the cleanup and abatement order, the last attachment. It's on June 30th, 2009. I will say that we mentioned during the ownership when the last monitoring to the owner was at the particular time. Actually, I believe the Castle family did pay for the last groundwater monitoring in 2005. Though they did not own the property at that time.
Okay.
We had met with Nancy and her mother, Jean, at that time.
And then a question for staff is, I understand I've heard $2 million was spent by the Castle family in attempting cleanup. Do we have any idea what the cost is for cleanup and what is still out there?
I would think that Mr. Tansey actually may have some current information on that. The current property owner has been looking at those costs quite extensively. Do I speak out of turn, Mr. Tansey? You probably have a good idea on that. I think he would be able to speak to that better than I would.
Okay. And is my understanding what's before us is whether or not to collect this original fee plus compound interest totaling $255,766 versus what the actual cost would be for cleanup, if that's determined?
It's my understanding that what's before us is to decide whether the executive officer abused his discretion. And maybe our council can clarify
that. Yeah, I can
add,
I think really the only decision you're making was it appropriate for Mr. Briggs to say that they hadn't cleaned up the property as they said they would in the settlement agreement? The amount of money that they owe would then be subject to the Attorney General's office to work with the parties to collect that. So, you know, whether there's evidence about whether they only owe $5,000 versus, you know, $85,000 plus interest is really, you don't really have to make that decision today.
Can you offer input?
Well, you certainly, if you want to have some flexibility, you could certainly say that, and the AG would take that into account in resolving the actual collection.
But Francis,
issue.
The way I read the recommendation, it would include our finding that the liabilities due are $255,000.
Right, and I'm saying you don't have to make that conclusion,
okay.
I mean, you don't have to make that decision. You can just say that Mr. Briggs was correct, that they're not in compliance with the settlement agreement,
okay.
And the actual process for resolving that issue is not really before you. It's with the Attorney General and the court,
okay.
In terms of addressing noncompliance with the settlement.
How was the interest calculated? Was it compounded daily, monthly?
Compound. No, annual. And I can talk to Department of Justice about doing that. This is the first we've heard this, so I'm more than happy to go back and look at that issue.
Right, but how did you compound the interest?
It was annual.
Annual. Okay, so you added it each year.
I do believe this warrants going back and talking, because there's also some difficulty in wording, in parsing it out between Castle VegTech and the Castle family individual members. So I do believe this is something where we would probably be talking again about how to distribute that per the terms of the settlement agreement. There's some real specific language about caps for individual family members and how that divvies up.
Okay. Mr. O'Malley?
Well, and that's still a question I have. That it sounds like not only is there a series of owners, there were corporate owners at one time, that those corporations no longer exist, and there is some limited liability related to the individuals. And you know, it's a concern to me that, you know, I'm not sure if that's under our jurisdiction or not to help sort this out, but I do have some sympathy and concern on how we're applying this, or whoever has the authority to apply this.
Mm-hmm. Well, the language does say liability shall be joint and several. So, and there are some, looks like some limits also involved in there. So I would agree with you. It needs to be looked at.
Could I ask a question?
Sure.
For our council? It sounds like it would be appropriate for the board to make a determination on whether a penalty amount is the liability is due, and then ask the Attorney General to make sure that it's the correct amount, and that would be a way of answering the issue that was just brought up today about whether it was should be compounded or not.
Correct. Yes, that would be appropriate.
And how it
would there be a time for us to take, I have some of Mr. O'Malley's considerations. There's some equity issues, I think, that are involved that aren't obviously going to be addressed in the settlement agreement. And so would there be a time for, if not this board, someone to take those things into consideration?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it could come back to you even in a closed session to discuss that.
Okay, good.
Okay. Well, Mr. Hash.
You know, I have a question that says from that foreclosure proceeding. Does that mean that it had to, when it was in foreclosure, but You solved it before the foreclosure.
I don't think it was actually in foreclosure, but it was very close.
Okay. Because if it wasn't foreclosure proceeding at any time, would that qualify that?
Right, and I think right now we just don't have the information to make the actual determination about the amount of money that's owed. So if you focus on the first part, did Mr. Briggs make the proper determination that, in fact, they're not in compliance or did not comply with the terms of the agreement? And then we can work on
the amount. That seems reasonable to me. We have one other speaker, though.